were not able to tailor the list, and so we had to go more of a shotgun approach and mail to everybody that filed a 1979 return showing a taxable balance of more than $100. And that's why the mailing is 162,000, when we actually feel that the number of vouchers that we will receive with payment will be considerably less. We knew at the time that we were mailing two people that would not be subject to estimated tax, but at the time, we had no way to identify who they were. As I mentioned before, we looked at the estimated tax program that the Internal Revenue Service has. We even went down to Ogden, and we looked at the programs of some of the other selected states that we felt had a good overall tax administration policy. And with the information that we got from these states and the federal government, what we tried to do is pick out the good parts of their packet or forms and combine all of those into something that we felt would give us the best coverage. And this is the end result. The packet starts off by on page 2, where we ask the taxpayer to follow these steps. We first instruct them to read the instructions in the packet, to complete the worksheet, pages 8 and 9, that's on in the back, and to use the chart on the back of the packet to decide if they must pay estimated tax, to complete Form 40S on page 3, and to keep a record of their payments. That's a general outline of what we wanted them to do.
You shouldn't skip the first page is one I like the best. I can get right through that one. That's a good page, though. It explains when the second quarter's due and the fact it's new law and roughly, so you should brag about the first page. I get lost on with all these words.
Okay.
Good.
Since this was the first year for this program, we felt we needed to explain to them basically what estimated tax was, and that we felt we did. We also needed to tell them who must pay estimated tax. We broke it down into three categories: the wage earners, the self-employed people, and the other people that receive income not subject to withholding. Since a qualification is based on gross income, and we felt that the chart on the back would help them determine if they were subject to the tax, we needed to explain to them what gross income is. And we specifically wanted to explain the difference between that and non-taxable types of income, such as Social Security and welfare payments. So we explained gross income. And I would also like to point out that this is the first of four times throughout this packet that we indicated, call us if you have questions. Our phone numbers are on page 9. And the phone numbers are our tax help unit. Our tax help unit is highly trained in estimated tax. And at the time we came up with this packet, we made the conscious decision that the tax help section would be a part of this. They would be a continuation of this and would be able to answer the questions. Farmers and fishers, if they meet certain qualifications, gross income qualifications, they are not subject to the estimated tax program. We wanted to point that out. Page 3 is the form.
Sounds like the Bible, farmers and fishers.
Page 3 is the form that they send in with their payment. Page 4, which is the back of the payment forms, are some instructions, just in case they become detached. Page 5 begins when to pay your Oregon income tax. And here we talk about the 1980 income tax. Pay that as you normally would by April 15th, 1981. Then we explain when the 1981 estimated tax payments are due. We also explain how the program is going to change in the next year, 1982, and then it goes from two payments down to one payment. And we have a small paragraph for the very few fiscal year taxpayers that file with the state. We also point out that the installment payments are no longer available. We explain to them the interest that if they do underestimate, that they will be charged interest at the rate of 1.5% per month or any part of a month.
Where is the bid on installment payments? Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman, if they underestimate and we charge them interest, if they overestimate, do we pay them interest?
Mr. Chairman, Senator McFarland, no, we do not. There are no provisions in the estimated tax law to pay interest.
Overestimated, Jerome Perilous. Government never gives what they...
Or underestimated, Jerome Perilous. In other words, you've got to know exactly.
Well,
that's ridiculous.
You can refile as you go along. So if you say my income's going to be $20,000 a year and you start paying estimates on that and suddenly you see that you're going to have an extremely good year and your income's going to be $40,000, then you file an amended form, don't you, or another form, and start paying in more?
That is correct. Right.
Of course, you may not know that until the fourth quarter. Some of the problem is sometimes that...
Yeah, but you can still do it on your...
you can.
Real late.
Sure.
Just pump it into them before April 50 or before the end of the year or whatever. You can do it right at the last minute if you really want to. Does the rule of 90% apply? If you take last year's income and pay based on at least 90% of that, are you all right?
Okay, what
you can do that with feds, I think.
Mr. Chairman, you're talking about the exceptions. There are four exceptions for not having to pay an interest charge on an underestimate. No, they are not in there. And we made the conscious decision not to put the exceptions in this packet. The estimated tax program is what the law is trying to get the people to do is estimate and prepay their taxes. The exceptions are not exceptions for trying to figure some way to bypass estimated tax. The exceptions are designed for the person that makes a good faith effort in estimating but simply misses it. In other words, it's his safety net at the end of the year. If he really missed it and he meets one of the exceptions, then he will not be charged an underpayment penalty.
Mr. Chair, how do you know? What do you do, make a moral judgment?
How do we know?
Yeah, how do you know that somebody really hasn't just honestly misestimated rather than is trying to beat the system, so to speak?
Well, we don't really know that, but we give them the opportunity to avail themselves of the four exceptions. And the four exceptions, they are complicated, generally will keep a person from having to pay the interest charge. What are the exceptions?
Is that 90% that he was talking about, one of them?
There is a 90% rule. One of the handouts that you have is an explanation of the exceptions. There's one exception for each page. Now this is another reason that we did not put the exceptions in the estimated tax packet, is because they are detailed, they are complicated, and the best way to explain them is with an example. Our whole intention was to keep the estimated tax packet at an eighth grade reading level, the way we do all of our general publications that go out to the taxpayer.
Say, I had a lot of complaints on the forum that you people calling up, but I think if you
say, having people complaining. 9 out of 10 just didn't like the idea they were going to have to do something new, not the fact that this form isn't clear, because I think if you read it, the form isn't all that bad. But I think we're going to have some concern on how you apply penalties on if what you're telling us, and I haven't read all these explanations, if in the fourth quarter, merchants, I guess I have a personal relationship with my wife's in business, and fourth quarter is our largest year. There's no way that you're going to accurately estimate if you're a growth and a growth factor and what that's going to be. And I guess what you're telling us is that they can still go in and file it and return it and file their normal income tax and say, look, this is what it is. It's probably okay. But
Rick, how close are these to the federal exception? Identical?
With the exception that we have two payment dates and the federal has four.
That's why continuously I asked the question during the special session, are we going to make people file an estimate who are not currently filing an estimate with the federal? And continuously I got the answer, yes. And then as I asked it for about the 20th time, finally, somebody broke down and said, well, maybe. And I've run into some now, I've run into some of the maybes who will have to file one. Not that they didn't have to file the federal, they were simply paying a small penalty. But now with the addition of the state, that small penalty is a little larger and their tax consultant's telling them they better go ahead and pay. But for the most part, the people that have to file these forms have had to do this on their federal tax all along. Unless they're a brand new taxpayer, and I'm sure there's a considerable number of those. So it's really much like the federal system, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Right.
So that was, I guess that was the only reason that I ever come close to buying off in the program. Senator McFarland?
Yes, another question. Do we have three payments? We make a first estimated payment, and then a second, and then the last one is whatever we still owe. Am I right about that, or do we have four?
Mr. Chairman, Senator McFarland, no, there generally are three payments. There's a first one-fourth of the tax is due April 15th. The second quarter is due June 15th, so that pays half the tax.
But that's not the second quarter. If you read this first exception here, it says the second payment must be greater than or equal to one-half of the 1980 tax liability. Do you really mean equal to one half, or do you mean combined with the first quarter to be equal to half? See, I already have a question about what your explanation means. Of course, maybe I don't read it at eighth grade level, but what do you mean by that? Do you see where I'm reading?
Right. Yeah. You're reading off the first exception.
The second paragraph of the first exception, it says the amount of the first payment must be greater than or equal to one-fourth of the 1980 tax liability. Then the next line says the second payment must be greater than or equal to one-half of the 1980 tax liability. Does that really mean that, or does it mean the two combined must be equal to half? That would be the logical thing, but at least my mind thinks it would be. See, I don't even know what you mean by that.
Where are you at?
The second paragraph of the first exception, it says the amount of the first payment must be equal to or greater than one-fourth of the 1980 tax liability. Then the next sentence says the second payment must be greater than or equal to one-half of the 1980 tax liability. And I want to know whether they really mean that, or do they mean the two combined must be equal to or greater than one-half. How do you know?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I remember right, they don't make four payments, do they?
He just said they made three.
They make three.
And one of those is a half, isn't it?
Just the last one. I think you're right there.
I remember there was a lot of discussion about how many times people should have to pay during the special session.
You're right all the time.
A quarter, a half, and a quarter.
Is it a quarter, a half, and a quarter? Or a quarter and a half.
Quarter, the next quarter, and then the remainder at the end.
So right. That instruction, that explanation of exception one is wrong.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Kirsten,
isn't that second payment due June 15th?
Correct.
And that was set up so that it would come in
this biennium.
This biennium. And then next year, it's
then it goes on the cycle. You're right. That's why it's written. We did it as an exception to get it online.
In other words, this one was done. It really was a half in June.
Right.
But now, from now on, it's going to be a quarter and a half.
Starting next year. Yes.
So change your instructions.
No. Starting next year, it's going to be a half and a half.
Right.
You're going to pay half in June and half in April.
Oh, you aren't going to have.
You're not going to make your first one.
You're not going to have a quarter.
Pay it in April. You're going to pay in June and April unless.
Well, our form says the first one's due April 15th.
Yeah, this year.
This year.
That was the accelerated program.
That's the accelerated.
That's this one.
Yeah.
Next year you're going to change the form.
That's correct, right.
Right.
There'll only be.
That was to get us online because they're trying to pick up the deficit.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry about that.
The problem that the general fund is facing in cash flow is indicating that it would have been prudent for us to have simply followed the federal system and had the strict quarterly filings, because our general fund had to borrow substantial amounts of money to make the property tax payments and the like, and paid $187,000 worth of interest to borrow that money. And now it appears as if we may be in a permanent cash flow problem. The state of Washington's in a cash flow problem. And I've asked the staff to check with the treasurer's office about the future cash flow problems in the general fund. And we'll get a report back on that. Now, to protect the legislature's integrity, we did have the treasurer's office in at that time, and then we were assured that there would be no cash flow problem. Well, I'm beginning to wonder.
Well, their estimated income was off.
Pardon?
They estimated their income off. They would have been penalized under this form.
Yeah.
We did it that way, though. The reason it's written that way, we did it to accelerate it, to get it online. That's why.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is they expect us to estimate every quarter what we're going to make, but they can't.
Yeah.
He just plays with it. Really wants to have to live with it.
Okay, right.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Are we then contemplating making payments requiring payments every quarter?
No. In fairness to your question, I'm not saying that we're contemplating that. I think we should ask what the future cash flow situation is going to be. There's only as I look at the politics, there's only one chance to straighten it out, and that's right now. Because once we get into a semi-annual system, we're going to change it. Now, the business community came in and said, look, you're going to step on us, you're going to squeeze us, even though it may be proper and most other states do it and all the arguments for it, you're going to squeeze us, but help us at the same time by making this semi-annual eventually as opposed to quarterly.
But what you were saying is if our cash flow is such that you perceive that we may have a permanent cash flow problem, then we may, in order to survive, have to have quarterly payments.
Unless we want to budget an interest payment every session for the general fund loan that it takes to get us through those bumps when there's not enough money.
And $187,000 may be a drop in the bucket to what we place pay someday.
That's right.
Examine.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Monroe,
it's coming back to me now. Basically, this was a compromise.
Yes, it was.
That was worked out during the special session between the business interests who didn't want to pay this tax at all and the needs of the general fund and the first suggestion by the governor, I think it was, that we go to a quarterly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
When the governor's recommendation coming into the special session was that we go to a quarterly prepayment. Some of our friends in the business community, AOI and so forth, said, hey, wait a minute, you're over penalizing us, and this
system was worked out as a compromise, that there would be a one-time quarterly payment, and then we'd move to a, yes, to a semi-annual payment.
Yes, all right.
And you're saying we better take another look at that.
Well, I wanted to see what the projections are with general fund flow, cash flow, and to see if in fact there's a possibility of a major problem. It's not something I'm begging to get into, because it's something I'd just soon let alone.
Mr. Chairman, it undoubtedly was pointed out many times during the process of this, which I did not sit in on, it, that people who work for a salary pay in advance every month.
but they don't do any estimate. It's actual. And, in fact, sometimes...
But
yeah,
still
it's yeah, they do pay.
It comes right out of your pocket.
That's
never
right.
That's why they're arguing.
Get the feel of it as it goes by.
And they, you know, if a person in business isn't doing the same thing, it's going to catch up with them or her, and or they go out and borrow it and pay interest on it in order,
sure,
to pay it. So the prudent business person is looking out for this liability as they're going along. Now, real small ones like myself, this is a godsend almost, because it gets me on a budget system, and I don't have, this April 15th scares the tippins out of me, because I've tried to save as I could on what I thought my tax liability would be, but I was not able to save as much as I think it's going, as I thought it was going to be. In other words, I got eaten alive by some payment increases that I didn't expect in my business. And as a result, I don't have on hand the money to pay. Now, had I been having to come up with these, I would have faced the gun in smaller increments a while ago, and I'd have probably wiggled my way through it. As it is now, I may be taking a day out of here and seeing my local banker.
You tighten your belt and eat beans.
Mm. I don't know if they'll loan me money to pay my taxes or not, but maybe I'll have to say I'm going to do something else and get my picture on the front page of the Oregonian, too.
Yeah. So Mr. Chairman, and getting back to Senator McFarland's, we'll pass over that. Getting back to Senator McFarland's other concern about the poor, unfortunate person who might estimate their tax too high, that happens to the majority of wage earners.
And in many cases, intentionally.
In many cases, intentionally, and they never get a penny of interest.
Yeah. Well, I'm in favor of them, too.
Well, what I'm saying is it wouldn't be appropriate for us to pay interest to people who overestimate unless we are also prepared to pay interest to all of those personal income taxpayers who overpay.
The new NOW account.
We got a lot of money.
That's what it would be, Senator Day.
I still think it's important that we examine that question of the quarterly estimate versus the semi-annual. And I'd just like to see the trend of what we see is occurring, because there's no question that wasn't a compromise. It really was during that. But our economic condition is even worse than what it was before, and I think examine just what that does to life, because I feel certain once that's in place, we won't go back and change it for some time.
They can be chiseled in stone.
Mr. Chairman, yeah.
Senator Trump.
The cash flow problems come because of giving back the money in the tax relief packages. Is that?
I think that's one of the big problems. Plus, I'm not sure that there aren't. You see, you've got your HART payments go out in October at the same time that your property tax relief payments go out, or to the counties. And I'm not sure that there aren't other liabilities that are bunched up in that time period, which caused the system to burn out.
I think a good discussion of that would be useful.
Okay, on page five, starting with this, with the second column, you may apply your 1980 income tax refund to your estimated tax payment. We have designed our system so that the taxpayer, if he is getting a refund on his 1980 income tax return, and at the same time he expects to owe taxes for 1981, we will allow him to segregate a portion or his entire refund and go to the estimated tax. We do that on the Form 40NR, the Form 40. We do not do that on the Form 40S. How to figure a 1981 estimated tax. We tell them what they will need to do it, what they should have in front of them to be able to estimate their 1981 tax. They'll need their 1980 Oregon return, their 1980 federal return, and the worksheet in this packet. If they have those items, then they should be able to estimate their next year's tax. Filing jointly, we have, generally we would prefer a joint filing, so, but we do tell them when they cannot file a joint estimated payment. The worksheet, again, we reference the worksheet on pages 8 and 9, and we tell them, if you have any questions, please call us. On page 6, we have an example which explains how the estimated tax would work using their 1980 using 1980 figures. They show a 1980 tax to pay, and then we explain how their an example of how their situation may have changed in 1981, where they estimate that their income is going to increase, and they estimate that they will have a 1981 estimated tax of $467. Since that amount is more than $100, and since they are filing joint and their gross income is in excess of $20,000, they are subject to the estimated tax, and they must pay 1/4 of that amount on each of the two dates, April 15th and June 15th. The next section, Form 40ES instructions, we explain each of the critical areas, the name and address. When we sent these out, part of the complications of this form was having their name and address and Social Security number pre-printed on the voucher. And so we're telling them if for some reason their name has changed, their address has changed, or their Social Security number is wrong, to go ahead and make that change on the voucher. We explain what to do with line 1, what to do with line 2, and what to do with line 3 on the voucher. We ask them to sign the form, we ask them to enclose their payment, and we ask them to mail it to us in a special post office box that has been designated and set aside solely for estimated tax payments. On page 7, in the middle left-hand column, we address the situation of what happens if they have to file an amended claim. We explain that. It's fairly simple to do. We have a small section on non-residents and part-year residents. Page 8 and 9 is the estimated tax worksheet. And I realize that it covers two pages, that there's a lot of words on there, there's a lot of lines, and there are 17 lines. I suppose at first glance, you know, it does look complicated, but once you get into it and you read it and you have all of the items that you need in front of you, it is not that hard. Basically, it follows the income tax return. If you can fill out an income tax return, then you can fill out this worksheet.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Dang,
I wanted to ask you on for example, an Idaho resident, person in Oregon. I know that you're showing the income listed. They pay Oregon income tax. Do we have a reciprocity agreement with Idaho, or do they get charged accordingly for a certain income tax?
It's an Idaho resident.
It's an Idaho resident. Works in Oregon. Lives in Idaho.
Okay, the Idaho resident would have to pay income tax on 100% of their income, regardless of where it is earned. The Idaho resident would also have to pay tax to the state of Oregon based
on... No reciprocity.
No, there is. There is. Idaho allows a tax credit for the amount of tax that they have to pay to Oregon.
I tell you, that happened to me. I worked in Idaho. I was an Oregon resident. Worked in Idaho for about a 14-month period. At that time, of course, that was back in
$450, so I had to pay tax in both places. Both places. There's no exception. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I wasn't very happy about it either. So
I can
tax was a little cheaper. But, well, that without going through every line of the worksheet, I think that pretty well does it, except on the very back you have a schematic you know, again, that's probably the most complicated looking thing, but if you read it, it's not.
Yes.
It's pretty simple, really.
Yeah, I like it. It's pretty well done.
It's good.
Yeah,
I
think you've done a good job.
We feel it was just another way, you know, graphically, sure, that we could explain the requirements of the program.
I ask you one question on this. He's gone, but when you come back and speak on your tax collection or delinquencies, I hope you'll speak, maybe go in and it mentions how you can really lower the hammer on people in your news bulletin. You call me and you can guarantee their wages and attach their bank accounts. But I kind of like to know the process that you go through from step one to until you get to the meltdown. I mean, okay. Would you explain kind of what you must have a procedure of what you follow? There's probably so many contacts that you obviously just don't make one telephone call and say, well, the dirty boobs aren't going to pay their tax and we're going to get them, right?
That is correct. You're not asking me to explain that.